Analysts say Black Friday brick-and-mortar sales were disappointing, but that doesn't seem to have been the case for online shopping. And it looks like we didn't even wait for Cyber Monday to spend our precious dollars online. GeekWire editor Todd Bishop is here once again. Hey, Todd.
Hi, Marcy.
I have heard a lot of analysts moaning about the Black Friday numbers, but you guys had a report about online sales, and the numbers look stratospheric.
Yeah, absolutely. You're seeing essentially the blurring of the lines between all of these somewhat arbitrary holidays, if you can call them that, the Cyber Monday, Black Friday. And what we saw this year was retailers like Amazon and others online trying to shift a lot of the sales, you know, forward in the calendar, essentially
earlier,
trying to get people to buy things well in advance of Black Friday online. We saw a big jump in mobile spending, people buying things with their smartphones, perhaps with one hand on the pot stirring the mashed potatoes for Thanksgiving. And so essentially you've seen this online world and the world of e-commerce just kind of disrupting the traditional retail model, even more so this year.
And how did our local behemoths do? And I'm talking specifically Amazon, Microsoft, the e-tailers.
Yeah, so Amazon in particular did fairly well. So they really pushed this idea of Cyber Monday starting 2 days earlier on Saturday. And so that contributed to an overall increase in online sales. And the big question is, are they essentially shifting it to earlier, or will it be up overall? And so far, there was just a report that came out saying that sales actually are up today on Cyber Monday so far compared to last year. So you out there can do your part to affect those numbers, you know, in the next couple hours.
I know that we have these days, Cyber Monday, Black Friday, and Black Friday was like a week for many of the brick and mortar stores as well. But essentially, it's how these companies do overall during the holiday season. It's not a particular day that matters, is it?
That's right. This is clearly the peak holiday shopping season for not only the physical retailers, but for the online retailers. And this is Amazon's biggest quarter of the year. And so this is overall where they're trying to focus their efforts.
And you mentioned Amazon is like the zillion-pound gorilla when it comes to online everything. And I understand now, in addition to hiring 80 some amount of thousands of people, they've got a new fleet of robots at work.
Absolutely. Just in time for the Cyber Monday, they came out with their big announcement last night where they really detailed and showed in a video all of the robotics and just how automated their fulfillment centers have become. And it's fascinating because if you look back 20 years to Amazon, Jeff Bezos had to be convinced, he had to have his arm twisted by an employee to buy a sorting table. And here you have these robots that are just zipping around. And yeah,
they, and if you look online on GeekWire, in fact, you have a picture, they look like yellow Zumbas. And a Zumba is one of those vacuum cleaner.
Oh, right. Roomba.
Roomba. Yes. That's what it's called, a Roomba. Zumba's a dance. So they're not like R2-D2. They aren't, you know.
They have those too.
They do?
Have the R2-D2.
They
yes,
have, our,
yes.
You know, humanoid type.
But the robots you're referring to are Kiva robots. And Amazon actually acquired this company a while back. And what they do is they're low to the ground, but then they zip under these shelving systems, lift them up just a smidge, and then can essentially do this orchestrated dance where they're distributing through these shelving systems the products to the workers who then pick them, pack them, and then send them off.
It's kind of astounding. GeekWire's Todd Bishop joins us once again. We're talking tech. And speaking of the holiday season, is this going to be the December of the tablet?
It's really a situation where, yes, this is essentially what Amazon is trying to do with the Kindle Fire. Now they're just calling them the Fire, by the way, the Fire tablets.
No Kindle
anymore?
No
Kindle in that brand name. It's Kindle e-readers, Fire tablets for people keeping score of the
so
brand
name. So the Fire is a tablet.
But, of course, the iPad is the 800-pound gorilla in this particular market. And you've seen Microsoft attempt with the Microsoft Surface to start chipping away with some somewhat cheeky commercials that they've come
up with. Well, very cheeky, but they don't stack up their Surface next to an iPad. They put it next to a regular laptop computer.
Right. And particularly a MacBook Air. They're saying the Surface, particularly the Surface Pro 3, can essentially replace your laptop. That's the pitch that they're making. And it's a tough pitch because you've seen Apple and Samsung have a lot of success extending from the smartphone into the tablets. Microsoft is trying to do it in the reverse, essentially taking its strong operating system on the desktop and taking it down to tablets.
So the phone, I understand they're called phablets.
That's right.
Phablets. Time magazine just named Microsoft Surface Pro 3 one of the top inventions of 2014, which, wow.
Bold.
I don't know how many, and I didn't actually count how many inventions.
I think there were
25. Well, so that's
it's
a nice accolade. Well, what does that mean when you translate it into sales?
So not as much nearly as
no.
Apple. No. If you look at Apple sales in the third quarter, for example, Apple was around just around $5.5 billion in
billion.
Overall revenue with a B. Microsoft was under $1 billion in terms of the entire Surface line. So this is a situation where Microsoft is making some headway and the Surface Pro 3 has been doing nicely for them, but Apple is still the dominant player here.
And would a Surface Pro 3 replace my laptop?
It really comes down to whether or not you like the keyboard that Microsoft offers with this. It is not a traditional laptop keyboard. They've improved it over the years with different versions of the Surface, but it still requires some adjustment, and you've got to go to the store and try it out.
I'm talking with Todd Bishop, who is the founder and editor of GeekWire, and let's go macro now with Microsoft. This week, Wednesday, in fact, Microsoft's shareholders hold an annual meeting in Bellevue, and there's a lot for them to reflect on, and in particular, it's the first, 11 months of Satya Nadella's reign.
Right, the first 9 months. So essentially
nine months.
A school year for Satya here.
Okay.
And so this
How's he doing?
You know, we did a report card.
Yes,
and
you did.
Bottom line, we gave him a B overall. He has, you know, essentially started the process of opening Microsoft up. If you look at things like making Office available for free on the iPad, he's looking beyond their legacy Windows business and recognizing that computing does not just happen on a Windows PC anymore, you know, and really embracing that fact. They've been doing a lot of interesting things behind the scenes. And, you know, he has had some obvious missteps. His comments on women in technology being one giant PR nightmare for the company.
Yeah, well, let's come back to that in a second.
Yeah.
I want to know what Nadella has done well. Where has the company shown?
Yeah, he's one great example that I like to bring up. Microsoft traditionally has a very somewhat stodgy meeting at Safeco Field. It's sort of a cheerleader rah-rah meeting for employees every year at Safeco Field. Satya Nadella actually nixed that and said, hey, you're going to do a two-day hackathon instead. And so it's largely symbolic, but what he's done is said, hey, Microsoft needs to become more nimble. The company needs to be more reactive, and sitting around listening to executives drone on for a day is not the way to do it.
Now, you mentioned the comments. Nadella essentially went to a women in tech convention and told those women that they should trust their managers, that those managers, mostly male, would reward them for work well done. You said it was a PR nightmare. How did those comments hurt the company as opposed to Nadella himself?
Yeah, I think it certainly gave the impression that he was not sensitive and that the company was not sensitive to issues of diversity, which actually is not the case. Microsoft has had a big push for diversity over the years. If you look at their board, for example, compared to Amazon, Microsoft's new chairman, John Thompson, is an African-American. He replaced Bill Gates as chairman earlier this year. So, Microsoft has also made a big effort to have women represented on its board. In fact, the person who was questioning Satya Nadella at that event, Maria Klawe from Harvey Mudd College, is a leader in computer science, and she is on the Microsoft board. So it in some ways, it was unfortunate because it covered up some of the things that Microsoft has been doing.
Did it hurt him personally?
I think it hurt his standing among employees. It really was a giant lesson for him. And you know, to his credit, he apologized quickly and he started to institute, at least in words, some changes at Microsoft.
Now, we're talking diversity. Jesse Jackson is in Seattle this week, and people may have seen comments that he made about Ferguson and protests. But part of his agenda coming to Seattle was to talk about racial disparities when it comes to the tech workforce. And in particular, Amazon has been the target of a lot of criticism. And I think that they are talking in particular about the sort of rank and file, the folks that Kiva Computers might be replacing. But what has Amazon done? You talked about what Microsoft has done. What has Amazon done?
Well, the first thing they've done is for the first time, just a month or so ago, they actually released their diversity numbers in response to Reverend Jackson. And so obviously the first step in making change is recognizing where where you are, and we didn't even really know that before. You know, 60% of Amazon's workforce in the U.S. is white. But the issue is 71% of their managers in the U.S. are white. The number is actually higher at Microsoft. So Amazon is a little bit different because you have the distribution centers changing the makeup of its workforce a little bit. The key issue here is making sure on a number of fronts that we are educating women and minorities and giving them opportunities at young ages to get into engineering, to get into leadership positions at these companies, and then making sure we have the capacity at the university level to actually fulfill the demand for computer science education.
And people only have to look at today's edition of the Seattle Times to find out how difficult that is. Todd Bishop is co-founder and editor of GeekWire, an online journal based in Seattle that covers the tech world. Todd, it's always great to have you here.
Thanks, Marcy.
This is The Record from KUOW.